The next presentation is, the topic is changes in AIDS mortality in South Africa, past, present, and future. South Africa experienced an explosive HIV/AIDS epidemic during the 1990s, which led to AIDS becoming the leading cause of death in South Africa in the early 2000s. However, AIDS deaths are believed to have dropped drastically since antiretroviral treatment became widely available. South African actuaries have been at the forefront of efforts to estimate and forecast AIDS mortality trends. In this presentation, we'll review the evidence of the changes in the AIDS mortality in South Africa and discuss the forecasts of key HIV models. We will also discuss whether there remains a need for a separate life table for AIDS mortality in light of the current trends. Our presenter is Dr. Lee Johnson. Dr. Lee Johnson is an actuary and an epidemiologist at the UCT Center for Infectious Disease, Epidemiology and Research. He specializes in modeling HIV, TB, and other diseases. He leads the development of the TEMBISA model, an integrated HIV, TB, and demographic model. He's also co-chair of the UNAIDS reference groups on estimates, modeling, and projections.
Thanks very much for that introduction. So I'm going to be speaking today about AIDS mortality in South Africa and how it's changed over time, just to give you an overview of what I'm going to be talking about. Is it the red button or the... There's two green buttons. There we go. Okay, so just to give you an overview of what I'll be covering, I'm going to start by talking about what we know about AIDS mortality based on the South African Vital Registration System. I'll then talk a little bit about what we've learned from cohort studies. I'll talk about insights from mathematical modeling. And then in the final section of this presentation, I'll just talk about what this all means for actuaries in South Africa. I do apologize for this. So starting out with insights from the Vital Registration System. In South Africa, more than 90% of adult deaths are recorded by the Vital Registration System, which is quite good by African standards. Unfortunately, though, the cause of death is often not reliably reported, and very often the cause of death is not reported at all. Death notification forms are first processed by the Department of Home Affairs, which updates the population register. The population register is a register of everyone in South Africa who's been issued an ID number. And after Home Affairs has processed those death notification forms, they get passed on to Statistics South Africa, which does more detailed analysis on the cause of death. So the population register is updated in real time, but it only provides limited information on the cause of death. Statistics South Africa does these more detailed analyses of cause of death data, but it only releases those mortality updates periodically and infrequently. The most recent report, unfortunately, is only for 2018. So I'm going to be focusing mostly here on the Status A reports on the causes of death. Here we're looking at total numbers of recorded deaths in South Africa, and you can see that between 1997 and 2006, there was this huge increase in recorded deaths, which we attribute to AIDS, although some of that was also due to improvements in the recording of mortality. Between 2006 and 2013, there was a substantial decline in mortality, which we attribute mainly to the impact of antiretroviral treatment, or ART. And then after 2013, there was a more gradual decline in mortality. In the early 2000s, we were often challenged regarding our interpretation of these mortality data. Many commentators argued that that early rise in mortality was not due to AIDS. And so I want to talk for a couple of moments about why we think the mortality increase was due to AIDS. Here we're looking at the change over time in the median age at death. Green is representing females, blue is representing males. And you can see that in the late 90s and early 2000s, there was a dramatic decline in the median age at death, particularly amongst females, and that's completely consistent with what you would expect to see in an AIDS epidemic, because HIV prevalence is much higher in females than in males, and it's highest at the youngest ages. After 2004, we saw a substantial reversal of that downward trend, consistent with the impact of antiretroviral treatment, extending the life of people living with HIV. We can also look at the proportions of deaths due to different causes. I mentioned that the cause of death data is not very reliable, but when we consider broad groupings of cause of death, we can gain some useful information. Here you can see the fraction of deaths that are due to infectious diseases in blue closely tracks the overall trend in mortality, implying that most of the changes in mortality that we've seen have been due to changes in infectious diseases. Here we're looking at the leading reported causes of death in the Stats South Africa reports over the period 2016 to 2018. And you can see that over this period, the leading causes of death were TB, diabetes, cerebrovascular diseases, other forms of heart disease. And HIV was ranked only number 5, accounting for about 5% of deaths in South Africa. It is important to note here that HIV is particularly susceptible to underreporting. So a lot of the deaths that are due to, or a lot of the deaths that are recorded as being TB or pneumonia are actually HIV related, and similarly for a lot of other causes. This was demonstrated very nicely in a study by Debbie Bradshaw and her team at the South African Medical Research Council. They did analysis of changes over time in the proportions of deaths due to different causes and how those correlated with the changes in HIV prevalence. Based on that, they were able to estimate how many of the HIV deaths were misreported, and that's what's shown in this slide. The total numbers of HIV deaths according to what was reported on the death certificate. And you can see in brown that only a small fraction of the HIV deaths were actually recorded as being due to HIV. A lot of the other HIV deaths were recorded as being due to TB in dark blue, lower respiratory infections in light blue, and various other causes. So what can we conclude from the vital registration data? We've seen that the mortality rates increased steeply between 1997 and 2006, consistent with what we would expect in an AIDS epidemic. Since then, we've seen a steady decline in the numbers of deaths, which is consistent with what has been seen in a lot of other African countries. And the decline, as I mentioned, is attributed to ART. But unfortunately, because of the poor recording of cause of death, it's difficult to say with certainty how much AIDS deaths have declined. The long delays in the processing of death notification forms unfortunately also make it difficult to make timely assessments of changes in causes of death. Okay, so moving on now to look at cohort studies. When we talk about cohort studies, we're talking about studies that follow groups of people with a particular condition over time and analyze their mortality rates and incidence of various clinical conditions. In the context of HIV, the most important source of cohort study data is the International Epidemiology Databases to Evaluate AIDS, or IDEA, collaboration, which is really a global collaboration of programs that provide ART and that are engaged in research on survival and clinical outcomes in people living with HIV. Our center at UCT hosts the data center for the Southern African region, so we spend a lot of time analyzing these mortality data. In most African countries, unfortunately, it's difficult to estimate the mortality rates in ART patients reliably, because a high proportion of patients are lost to follow-up, meaning the patients have disappeared. It's difficult to know what happened to them, but very often these are patients who've died and whose deaths have not been recorded. In South Africa, though, we are in the fortunate position that we can link patients with ID numbers to the population register, and this makes it possible to determine with more accuracy what the mortality rates are in people on ART. So I'm going to present briefly on an analysis we did several years ago on life expectancies of people on ART in South Africa. I actually presented this at the 2012 convention. So in this analysis, we were using data from 6 South African ART programs that participated in the IDEA collaboration. The analysis was restricted to adults who were starting ART for the first time. Patients who were lost to follow-up who had IDs had their vital status determined through linkage to the National Population Register, and we used inverse probability weighting to upweight those patients to estimate the mortality of all lost to follow-up patients. And then we used relative survival models fitted to these mortality data to create life tables stratified by sex, cohort, baseline, CD4 count, and time since ART initiation. Relative survival models are a statistical model for estimating the excess mortality in people with a given condition relative to some standard mortality table. And in this case, we were taking that standard mortality from HIV-negative life tables from the ASSA 2008 model. I'm going to go through this. Well, I'm going to skip this slide in the interest of time, but just to mention in the bottom right, you can see the baseline CD4 distribution of patients in our cohort. Only 13% of those patients had CD4 counts above 200. So this is because at the time we did this analysis in 2012, the guidelines on when to start treatment were very restricted. People were only really allowed to start treatment if their CD4 counts were below 200. And so we were dealing with a relatively sick cohort of patients. So here we're looking at life expectancies at the time of ART initiation by age at ART initiation on the x-axis. You can see that for females in pink, starting treatment at age 20, the life expectancy was 37 years, and for males starting treatment at age 20, the life expectancy was 28 years. And then that decreased with increasing age at ART initiation, as you'd expect. Here we're looking at the same figures, but now broken down by baseline CD4 count and also comparing life expectancies to the HIV-negative life expectancies, which are in the light blue bars. The pink is representing people starting treatment at a CD4 count above 200, and you can see that for males, those life expectancies were typically around 70 to 75% of the HIV-negative life expectancies. The darker red bars are for people starting treatment at lower CD4 counts, and you can see that those people had much poorer prognosis. And we see similar patterns for females. Here the life expectancies of people, of women starting treatment at CD4 counts greater than 200 were around 80 to 85% of the HIV negative life expectancies. Here we look, here we're looking at a sensitivity analysis where we were trying to remove the effect of the very high mortality rates that occurred during the first year of treatment. So we were comparing mortality or comparing life expectancies at the time of ART initiation to life expectancies 2 years after ART initiation in pink. And you can see that life expectancy increases by about 15% when you remove that first two-year period in which the mortality rates are typically relatively high. So that analysis was done in 2012, and a lot has changed since then. We often get asked, were we underestimating life expectancies in that analysis? And there are a couple of reasons to suspect that we were. There was a historic bias towards enrolling sicker, more symptomatic patients. As I mentioned, the treatment eligibility criteria at the time mostly recommended delaying treatment unless people were sick with symptoms of advanced HIV disease. Between 2011 and 2016, there were a series of guideline changes which culminated in what we now call universal ART eligibility, which basically means anyone can start ART regardless of their CD4 count or their symptoms. And so what we would expect now to see clinically a much healthier cohort of patients starting ART than we saw in that period in this analysis. Also, there may have been reductions in mortality as a result of improvements in drugs and as a result of better patient management strategies. So to address some of these concerns, we've done a more recent analysis of IDEA mortality data from all the global regions, not just South Africa. And here we're looking at the mortality rate ratios by calendar period. In the panel on the left, we're looking at the Asian and American regions, and in the panel on the right, we're looking at Sub-Saharan Africa. These mortality rate ratios are relative to the 2011 to 2014 period. The dark gray bars, sorry, I should mention that in all of the analyses, we were adjusting for age, sex, baseline, CD4 count in region. In the dark gray bars, those were the only factors that we controlled for, but in the light gray bars, we were also controlling for duration on ART. And you can see that in the Asian and American regions, it didn't really make much difference whether we controlled for treatment duration. It was mortality rates were declining over time. In the sub-Saharan African region, we saw a slightly different story. When we controlled for treatment duration, there was a dip in mortality between the 2001 to 2006 period and the subsequent periods, but mortality appeared to be relatively stable after 2006. So not much evidence to suggest a change in mortality when we control for both CD4 count and treatment duration, at least not in the period after 2007. We also calculated mortality rate ratios by baseline CD4 count. There are two sets of analyses here, one for the first 12 months of treatment and the second for longer treatment durations. In both analyses, you can see that the mortality rate ratios were substantially lower at the higher CD4 counts, which is another reason to suspect that our earlier analysis was biased towards underestimating life expectancy because we had relatively few of those patients who started treatment at very high CD4 counts. So the data I've presented so far have been mostly from uninsured populations. There have also been some studies done on mortality rates in insured populations. This analysis by Lee Sarkin was done using data from MedScheme in South Africa. And what we're looking at here is the mortality rates by time since ART initiation on the x-axis, and the different colors represent different baseline CD4 counts. You can see that, as before, mortality rates are very high in patients starting treatment at low CD4 counts, but they drop dramatically after the first year of treatment, and at longer treatment durations, they stabilize at relatively low levels. So to conclude from the cohort studies, I think it's important to note that the cohort studies have almost all been done in treated individuals. We have very few cohort studies in untreated individuals. But these studies from treated individuals show that people who are on ART have very low mortality rates, especially if they started treatment with a high CD4 count and have survived past the first 2 years after treatment initiation. Our analyses also suggest that after controlling for baseline CD4 count and ART duration, the ART mortality rates in South Africa haven't changed much over the 2001 to 2017 period. But nevertheless, life expectancies of people starting treatment at higher CD4 counts above 200 are likely to be higher than in our earlier analysis because a higher proportion of patients started treatment at those higher CD4 counts. Okay, so moving on to look at mathematical modeling. The actuarial profession in South Africa has been very centrally involved in HIV modeling. This began in the 1990s with the work of Peter Doyle and Rob Jarrington, who led the development of the ASA AIDS and demographic model. This was a tool to estimate AIDS mortality trends in South Africa. The model produced population-level estimates of AIDS mortality stratified by age, sex, population group, province. There was concern that these model estimates might not be appropriate to insured populations, And so a separate model called the AstraSelect model was developed to simulate the impact of HIV in subpopulations like workforce populations. It is important to note that the ASA models made very conservative assumptions about mortality rates in ART patients. This was initially because we didn't have a lot of data on mortality rates in patients on ART, and we were informed mostly by data from the very early treatment durations at which mortality rates were high. But also, unfortunately, there was just a lack of investment in sustaining those models, and so they weren't updated as new data became available. So I mentioned that Rob Durrington at UCT led a lot of the early work on the ASA AIDS and demographic model. Independently of Rob's work on the ASA model, our group at UCT has worked on a number of other HIV models. This includes the STI-HIV interaction model, which is a model to understand the effect of other sexually transmitted infections on HIV. We developed a more detailed pediatric HIV model, and we also developed a model for the National Strategic Plan, or NSP, to predict how many people would be needing ART under various different scenarios. All of these models were answering slightly different questions, and we recognized the need for a single integrated model that could address all of these policy issues. And so this led us to the development of the Tembisa model, which really synthesizes a lot of the features of these previously developed models. In Xhosa and Zulu, the word Tembisa means give hope or promise, and we chose this name because it really reflects the sense of optimism that existed at the time around a number of the new prevention and treatment strategies for HIV. So just to give you an overview of the Tembisa model, the Tembisa model is a combined demographic and HIV model developed to simulate the South African population and the HIV epidemic. It's a deterministic and compartmental model. It starts simulating the population in 1985 and updates the population profile at monthly time steps. We've developed national and provincial versions of the model, and all versions of the model can be accessed from our website, tembisa.org. Most of the results I'm going to be showing now are from version 4.6, the most recent version. This is just an illustration of how the model of HIV disease progression is structured. You can see that people start out when they acquire HIV in an initial acute stage of HIV infection, and they then progress through four stages of advancing immune suppression in the absence of treatment. Those stages of disease progression are defined in terms of CD4 count. The different columns here are representing different levels of engagement in HIV care. So the first column is people who've never been tested. The second column is people who've been tested but not diagnosed. The third column is people who've been diagnosed but not yet started treatment. And then finally, we have a series of columns representing people who've started treatment, stratified according to their baseline CD4 count and time since ART initiation. And the different shades of red here represent different mortality risks. So our assumptions about mortality rates depend on baseline CD4 count, time since ART initiation, age, sex, and average rate of ART initiation in previous years. And those HIV-related mortality parameters come from the IDEA data that I mentioned earlier. They can also be adjusted to take into account potential biases. So there were some concerns about the IDEA SA cohorts perhaps not being representative of South African ART programs generally. We've taken a Bayesian approach in calibrating the Tembisa model, which means firstly specifying prior distributions to represent our uncertainty around key model parameters like the HIV transmission probabilities, the untreated HIV survival rates and the treated survival parameters. And those prior distributions are based on reviews of the medical literature. The second step in the Bayesian approach is specifying likelihood functions to represent the goodness of model fit to the data. We've specified likelihood functions for a large number of different data sources, which are listed in this table. I'm not going to go through them all, but just the two most important ones are the HIV prevalence surveys in the first two rows and the recorded deaths. So this is an example of the model calibration to the HIV prevalence data from the National Antenatal Clinic surveys, the dots representing the survey results, the solid line representing the model estimates, and the dashed lines the confidence intervals. You can see that the model matches fairly closely the results from those early, from the antenatal surveys, although we don't get a very good fit to the early antenatal surveys because of problems with the representativity of those early antenatal surveys. Here we're looking at the calibration to the recorded death data. You can see that both for males in blue and for females in red, the model is producing a reasonably good fit to the data, although you can see that in 2018 the model slightly overestimates, and that may just be a late reporting issue. Here we're looking at the same graph, but now we are looking at the model estimates disaggregated into AIDS deaths in red and non-AIDS deaths in gray. And I've included this slide really to reinforce the point that the model estimates that most of that increase in mortality in the period up to 2005 was due to AIDS. And similarly, that a lot of the decline in mortality after 2005 was due to ART. Also shown here in the dashed lines is our estimates of what the mortality trend would have been if there had been no ART program in South Africa. So that's a kind of a counterfactual scenario. The difference between the dashed line and the shaded red area is representing the reduction in mortality as a result of ART. And you can see the pretty dramatic impact that the National ART Program has had in South Africa. Here we're just looking at mortality according to level of engagement in HIV care. So the dark blue is representing deaths in people who've not been diagnosed positive. You can see that for a long time in the period up to 2007. This was the major group in which AIDS mortality was occurring. Since then, an increasingly large fraction of the AIDS deaths are in people who are diagnosed but not yet on ART. And then the pink and the red are representing the deaths in people who are on ART. Here we're looking at projections into the future. So the blue line is representing our Timbisa model estimates of what we expect the past and future AIDS mortality trends are. This is in the absence of any future changes to prevention and treatment programs. So currently in 2023, we estimate there's about 50,000 AIDS deaths in South Africa, and we expect that number to remain relatively unchanged over the next two decades in the absence of any changes in policy. That represents about 8% of all deaths in South Africa. And the red line is showing you what the mortality trend would have been in the absence of an ART program. We would have expected AIDS deaths to rise to about 450,000 per annum in the absence of treatment, which would have been about half of all deaths. So in the last part of this presentation, I just want to talk about what this all means for actuaries. If HIV is currently accounting for only about 8% of deaths in South Africa, it is appropriate to ask whether it's still necessary to have separate life tables for people living with HIV. And we should ask whether HIV mortality should be considered in the same way as mortality for other chronic conditions. It is important to note that in insured populations, the contribution of HIV to mortality is likely to be much smaller than 8% because of socioeconomic differences in HIV risk and also because of socioeconomic differences in mortality amongst people living with HIV. I mentioned that we were assuming no future changes to HIV programs as well, but it is quite possible that with the introduction of newer antiretroviral drugs like dolutegravir, we may see even further declines in mortality. Dolutegravir is a new drug which is associated with a much lower risk of drug resistance and better viral suppression. So this next slide is just reinforcing the point I made about the socioeconomic differences in HIV prevalence in South Africa. Here we're looking at the results from a 2016 survey that was conducted in South Africa. The pink bars represent female HIV prevalence by level of education. You can see a strong negative association. The blue bars are the male prevalence by level of education, and again, a negative association, although not as strong as in women. And the next slide is showing the results from a meta-analysis that was done by Charlotte Probst, looking at socioeconomic differences in mortality amongst people living with HIV in South Africa. And basically what she found in her review was, regardless of whether socioeconomic status was defined in terms of income or wealth or employment status, the HIV-positive people of lower socioeconomic status had substantially higher mortality than the HIV-positive people of higher socioeconomic status. So when actuaries assess the insurability of people with HIV, they often look at the ratio of mortality rates in people living with HIV to sort of standard mortality. And this is one example of an attempt to do that, again from the work of Lee Sarkin using data from MedScheme. There's a lot going on in this slide, but I'll talk you through it. This slide is again showing mortality rate ratios. In each panel, we have time since ART initiation on the x-axis. The different colored bars are representing different baseline CD4 count categories. The dashed blue lines are representing the mortality rate ratios of 1, and the dashed red lines are the mortality rate ratios of 5. The blue dots are representing the mortality rate ratios for people with diabetes. So essentially this is an attempt to compare HIV with another chronic condition, which is diabetes. So the top left panel is for people who have controlled HIV. These are people who are virally suppressed and who have CD4 counts above 200. You can see that in these patients, the mortality rate ratios are generally close to 1, so they have close to normal mortality, and very much lower than the mortality rates in people with diabetes. In the panels to the left and below, we're looking at the mortality rate ratios in people who are not virally suppressed and in people who haven't yet experienced immune recovery. You can see that those people have high mortality rates, more in line with the diabetic mortality. And in the bottom right panel, we're looking at the mortality rate ratios in the small minority of people who are experiencing both virological failure and immunological failure. And those patients have relatively high mortality rates. I'm going to go through this very quickly in the interest of time, but just to mention that actuaries at Swiss Re did a similar analysis using mortality data from Europe, found very similar results. Those mortality rate ratios were between 1 and 5 in most ART patients, especially if they started treatment after 2000 and had high baseline CD4 counts. So I want to take a step back for a moment and talk about some of our other model estimates, so looking beyond just the mortality estimates. And I want to start by looking at our estimates of HIV incidence. The HIV incidence rate is the rate at which new HIV infections occur. And you can see here that in South Africa, the HIV incidence rates peaked in the late 1990s and have since dropped quite dramatically. Blue is males, red is females, the vertical gray line is where we are currently, and you can see that we expect that those incidence rates will continue to decline even in the absence of any changes to current programs. Here we're looking at our expected changes in the number of people living with HIV stratified by age. You can see that in the early stages of the HIV epidemic, a lot of the HIV was in younger adults in light blue and children in darker blue. Over the last decade, there's been a big decline in those numbers as a result of the reductions in HIV incidence that we saw in the previous slide. In contrast, the numbers of people living with HIV at ages 50 and older in red are expected to increase very dramatically over the next two decades. By 2040, we expect that about 60% of all people living with HIV in South Africa will be over the age of 50. And this is not because people at the age of 50 are having more sex and getting HIV more frequently. It's because those people who became infected at the younger ages and the earlier stages of the epidemic are aging into the 50-plus cohort at the same time that incidence rates are dropping at the younger ages. So this is really representing an aging effect. And as a result of that aging, we expect to see quite a significant shift in the age distribution of AIDS mortality. You can see that in the early stages of the epidemic, a lot of the AIDS deaths were in children in dark green and in young adults in lighter green. In future, though, we expect to see a more significant fraction of those AIDS deaths at ages 60 and older in red. So we are seeing a transition from AIDS as a disease of the young to AIDS as a disease of the elderly. So to conclude, HIV is becoming more like other chronic conditions. The mortality risk is only really significant in untreated individuals and people who have not yet experienced immunological recovery after starting treatment. As HIV incidence rates in South Africa have declined, we are seeing an aging of the HIV-positive population, and most future HIV deaths will occur in older adults. So this means that we need to do more research into aging with HIV and the interactions between HIV and other chronic conditions. And that brings me to an end. I'd just like to thank the many people who've given support and input on these various pieces of work that I've presented today, but most significantly Rob Darrington, who led a lot of the early work on the ASSA model and who's been very central to a lot of the analyses of mortality in South Africa. And also just included a couple of references. Thanks. Happy to take any questions.
Are there any questions here before I go online? There are about two questions online.
Thanks so much, Lee. Great to hear from you again, and I think that was super useful. I guess it confirmed my sense that from an overall actuarial valuation perspective, worrying about AIDS mortality and changing AIDS mortality is probably not such a big deal. But those last couple of slides looking at the changing in average age of people living with AIDS and so on, is there anything to worry about from a pricing perspective, the pricing different tranches in different ways? Seems like there might be.
Yeah, it's difficult to say because we don't really know a lot about interactions between HIV and other chronic conditions. We've started doing work on this recently, and the preliminary results are suggesting that actually, the interactions between HIV and other chronic conditions are mostly negative, not positive. In other words, HIV seems to be negatively associated with a lot of the other chronic conditions. But it's still early days with these analyses, and it's at odds with the findings that most of the cohorts in high-income countries have found. So we are a little bit cautious about the interpretation, and there's definitely a lot more work that needs to be done there. Yeah, so I think the short answer is we don't know yet. Thanks.
So online, do you have an idea of the prevalence of sharing of ART treatment and the likely impact on mortality?
It's a good question, and I don't think there have been any studies done in South Africa on specifically the prevalence of sharing of antiretroviral treatment. What I will say, though, is that treatment is very widely available. It is freely available in the public health sector, and so there shouldn't be any need for people to share the drugs when they are freely and easily accessible. We have estimated treatment coverage using various different methods, so not just the total reported numbers on treatment from the Department of Health, but also using surveys where people have actually had blood specimens taken and tested for antiretroviral metabolites. And these different methods for estimating treatment coverage are generally very consistent with one another, which does suggest that there's unlikely to be a lot of treatment sharing going on.
Another question, how is the exposure and deaths classified into individuals who want ARV treatment versus those who want? Specifically, given the prevalence of individuals not carrying on with the treatment as required, anecdotally from family members working in the public healthcare. Or put differently, for how long must a patient have stopped their treatment to classify as not being on treatment? And for example, a pregnant woman who was advised and given ARVs to protect their unborn baby, but who stops taking treatment while breastfeeding, thereby acting on a detriment of both their own health and also giving the disease to their newborn child. It's easy to see how various other situations can arise where treatment is taken irregularly, even in the absence of a pregnancy, as an additional motivation factor for the need to continue treatment.
Thanks for that question. So I think the crux of the question is really what happens when people interrupt treatment, which is a very common phenomenon. We do see quite a high rate of treatment interruption. It is unfortunately very difficult to answer that question because we can only, in our IDEA analyses, estimate the sort of total mortality in people who've started ART. We don't always know, or very often we don't know, if they were on ART at the time that they died. And that means it's difficult to kind of pass out what was the mortality on treatment versus mortality in people who stopped treatment. Unfortunately, this is another question where I have to say we don't really know. For the purpose of estimating the population level impact, we are mostly interested in that total mortality, combining people who've interrupted treatment and people who are actively on treatment.
Hello, Professor. I just also want to understand, because in the graphs I saw a lot of the males in the minority in terms of deaths. Is this maybe because there's not a lot of males getting tested for HIV and also efforts from government to get people to test? Has that changed over time?
Thanks for that question. I actually didn't show the... I showed substantially higher levels of HIV prevalence in females than in males, which is quite typical of what we see in most predominantly heterosexual epidemics. What we have seen, though, is that in the early stages of the HIV epidemic, a lot of the mortality was in females, which is consistent with higher HIV prevalence in females. That's changed, though, since antiretroviral treatment has become available. There are many studies showing that men don't get tested as frequently as women do, and once they have been diagnosed positive, they are less likely to start treatment than females do. And as a result of that, we're actually seeing now higher HIV mortality amongst men than amongst women, unfortunately because men are not getting tested and started on treatment to the extent that they should. And yes, the life expectancy analysis that I showed was for people starting treatment, even on treatment, we see higher levels of mortality in men than in women. And the reasons for that are complex, but I think a lot of it has to do with the background non-HIV mortality, the very high levels of violence that we see in South Africa and the associated increases in mortality in men. Thanks.
Hi, Lee. A question on COVID and interaction with HIV. Did you see any increase in mortality? Have you done any recent investigations related to COVID deaths and HIV-positive lives?
Yeah, that's a good question. So in the Western Cape, we did an analysis of COVID mortality in people living with HIV and compared that to COVID mortality in people without HIV. And we did find quite a significantly higher level of mortality in the people who were co-infected with HIV and COVID compared to having just COVID. This is at odds with most other international studies which have not found or have only found a very small interaction. So we're not quite sure why it is that in the Western Cape we've seen this very significant interaction, whereas international studies have generally found HIV doesn't really seem to increase COVID mortality risk that much. Yeah. I don't have the numbers off the top of my head, but we published a study in Clinical Infectious Diseases in 2022 that had all of the details. I can email it to you.
Thanks, Prof. Does your work continue or still assumes that HIV causes AIDS?
So Thabo Mbeki was really the person who started that debate. It was a kind of a hot topic in the early 2000s. I think most scientists disagreed with it, and there was a lot of debate around it at the time. I think the consensus was that it was not supported by good evidence. Mbeki was quite severely criticized at the time and continues to be criticized for raising uncertainty around the link between HIV and AIDS. He has gone quiet on that issue. It's a serious debate anymore.
Okay, all right, no, it's fine.
I think one more online. What is the main reason incident rates are reducing, change in behavior? Are those ARVs less contagious?
Good question. So we published a study last year where we looked into this issue, and basically there are four main explanations for why HIV incidence rates have dropped so dramatically. The first is that there were major condom promotion campaigns in South Africa in the late 90s and early 2000s, which led to big increases in condom use. Secondly, there have been major HIV testing campaigns, and those HIV testing campaigns have led to increased knowledge of HIV status. People who've been diagnosed generally have less unsafe sex. I also mentioned the rollout of antiretroviral treatment. People who are on ART are much less likely to transmit HIV because the drugs suppress the virus and make it virtually impossible to transmit the infection. And then more recently, there's also been campaigns to promote male circumcision as an HIV prevention strategy. So all four of these factors have been significant in explaining the declines in HIV incidence that we've seen over the last two decades.
Thank you, Dr. Johnson.